and welcome to this week's podcast. I'm Helen Tovey, editor of Family Tree, and with me is
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
Hello. So, how's it going then, Nathan? How's your family history going?
It's going well, but my head also has exploded. So, following on from last time, I obviously was wondering whether I should take a subscription to Ancestry and find out information. And then I also wanted to find out about a distant relation that I didn't know where to place. So I went ahead and got the subscription to Ancestry. And now my head is just a fog of numbers and names and dates and places. And yeah, it's blown my mind a bit. I've made some really good progress. It was really exciting. I'm going to be all over the place today. I don't know what I can actually honestly remember to tell you what I've done. But
Well, I had your name of your auntie Mildred, who might not have been your auntie. You kind of strongly suspect she wasn't actually your auntie, but she was somebody's auntie, presumably.
I have not actually researched that. It's something I do still want to do. I am keen, but I feel like I'm going to set a day aside to like look for her. I had all the intentions of looking for her, but I got so lost in everybody else. It was brilliant, but it was a lot. And I'm like, again, it's that completionist urge. I'm finding things. I'm like, oh, I need to add this. I need to add that. I need to do that. I guess I should go back a bit. Like, obviously, we talked about doing the research log, which I started. I've been doing that. And then I have also gone on to Excel, as you advised, and created a list of like completionist stuff, just so I know what's going on.
Tell me about that list you've created so that you know what's going on. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it's right or not, but what I've done is I've created an Excel document. I've got a level, which for me is like me, my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, blah, blah, blah.
Going generation.
Yeah, each generation. That would be the better word for it. Well done.
No, level's fine.
Yep. Oh my God. Right. I'm such an amateur. Right. And then it's got the name and then the surname. And then after each big detail, I've put a column called source so I can then like chart where I found that source so I can go back to it later on. It's got birth, death, marriage. And again, like I say, in between one, each one's got the word source. So for example, I was just trying to get my great-great-grandparents done, dusted, fully complete, so I'd have their birth, their death, and their marriage. A lot of the information I already had from my mum, but then there were some missing bits. So that was like my first real area of research. So I managed to find out my great-grandparents, David, George, and Winifred, found out their births, their deaths, and their marriage. And that's all through going through these forms in Ancestry. Sorry, not forms, certificates in Ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
So I use like the Church of England birth and baptisms for Manchester and birth and baptisms for West Yorkshire to find both of their birth dates, which was cool. Their death dates, I found that on the probate calendar, which I don't know. I mean, it must be right, but I was expecting to find a natural death certificate. Do they not do that on Ancestry?
So Nathan's sharing his screen with me and it is absolutely fantastic. I'm just so proud of him. He's got honestly, if all of us had started out, Nathan, doing this with our family history, we would just be feeling like we were walking on the clouds.
I don't know what you've done to me.
So he's got this lovely spreadsheet. The first column's got generation, so it goes me. Then he's got two lines for his parents, four lines for each grandparent. And then going across, he's got name and surname. And then he's got those key details, birth, marriage, and death. And for each one, he has a source, which we all know is the Holy Grail. We should keep those records of where we find the stuff. He's actually doing this. It's just brilliant. And then, so he's been using his wits. And rather than paying for certificates from the GRO, which is a really good idea to do that, but if you can get the church register entries from Ancestry or from another paid subscription site, then you can get those same key information once you're looking at the more recent church registers. So in the 1800s, 1900s, that sort of thing. So he's doing that. So he's saving himself, although he's paying for a subscription, he's saving himself money on certificates and still getting original source material with those fine-tuned details of precise dates of birth rather than just a quarter. He's getting the dad's names, presumably from these church registers as well. So Nathan, I'm just so impressed by you. I'm so impressed.
I felt so embarrassed doing it. I was like, oh my God, this is so not me. It felt good. It felt meticulous. And I feel like literally, my name has exploded with dates and names.
You'd feel proud of yourself. I mean, that's the nice thing though about life is when you learn something which isn't you, and then you find out a different bit of you, and you think, oh, well, maybe I'm a super geek, but hang it, it's really handy to be a super geek. Anyway, you asked me a question and then I didn't. Oh, the National Probate Calendar. You're wondering about that, what the heck that was, and whether they included death or burial details on Ancestry or on a paid subscription site.
Yes.
Yeah, so first up, then they will include burial details, and they will have other things called memorial inscriptions, which is basically what it says on gravestones. So people go around and write them up and create digitized records of those. So you can search for those. So you might well find burial information about your ancestors and about their graves. You may or may not find that, but that's definitely worth looking for. The National Probate Calendar. So that is a record. Basically, it's called a calendar. I think it's called a calendar because it's alphabetical. I could be wrong about this. If anybody knows the precise difference between a calendar and an index, which lots of people do, but I can't quite remember what it is off the top of my head, then they can comment below or they can let us know. We could clarify in a future podcast. Anyway, it's basically like an index, and it's an annual index of everybody who has had their will proved. So they've died and had their will proved. So you're getting a really official source, and on there it will have details of the person who's died, their date of death. It will have an address. It will have the amount that they left on their will. So that's always worth. So again, you know, I banged on earlier, when you get your marriage certificate or the person's marriage certificate, don't just get the marriage details and run away. Think of every other clue you've got on that document. It's the same with this National Probate Calendar entry. It's really interesting to see how much money they left, to see who the executors were, because sometimes they could be their children or other relations, or, you know, they're going to be someone close in their lives.
Okay, fabulous. I didn't even clock any of that information on those ones, because I remember you saying that about other things. So further down this list, I found somebody's marriage, and then I got their father's names from that marriage certificate. So I was like, oh, I've done that. I've learned extra names, but I didn't actually pay any attention to the probate when I just took their death date, and that was it.
Yeah, and that's we all do that. We all kind of we've focused, and in a way that's good, because you've got your goal there. Your research goal was to find these birth, marriage, and deaths. So you've accomplished the goal of not going down rabbit holes and being focused. So that's one part of it, isn't it?
It's not quite true. I went down quite a few rabbit holes.
Did you? What? So what sort of thing made you go down a rabbit hole then?
Siblings. That was massive. I kept on getting, like, with the hints, I'd go in and it'd be like, oh, this is the so-and-so. So I'd check all the details and I'm like, yeah, they're all great. And then you look down and then there's a list of siblings. And in my head, I didn't want to involve siblings just yet because I wanted just to get the birth, death and marriage. But then I'm like, well, it's asking me to confirm this. Once I've confirmed this, I can't go back and unconfirm it. Go back and get extra details from it. Yes. It's saying if I ignore it now, it's gone. And I'm like, okay, do I want to add the siblings? So some of them I did add the siblings. So they're like siblings layers on my tree now, but with minimum information. But it just opened it up to me even more, was making my head spin quite a lot. In other examples, I found some people that might have been married two times, maybe even three times. And that was something, obviously, I know that happens, but I wasn't prepared for it to appear on my tree, and I don't know how I'm reacting to it in terms of the structure of it. One of my great-grandparents had two children for sure, potentially five children, and I'm like, I wasn't adding children either. It just literally sent me off on tangents, and then I'm like, oh, I need to find out which wife came first and which came second, and it's like, this isn't why I'm here now. So I've on my research log, I went back to that and I put notes saying hashtag siblings, hashtag whatever, as something to try and ignore and come back to, because it was too much. So I made a few notes, like I found people but not added because I wasn't unsure about, like, they had two wives and five children. Then I've learned a few bits about occupations as well, which again, I wasn't looking to add to my tree initially, but then I'm getting interested in things like there's a guy who was a butler or somebody who was a dock worker, and this is quite intriguing, and it's obviously going to flesh them out as characters. But again, it's making all the information I want bigger, and it's just making my head totally explode. So I'm like, right, okay, try to stay focused on just the key details. As soon as you open one document, you're getting, like you say, you're not just getting one bit of information, you're getting two, three, four, five bits, and it's just so much to take in. Again, and as much as I'm moaning about it, that Excel document does calm my mind. It makes it easier. I've got a direct path of knowing what I want to do. So any blanks that I don't know or I've got a vague hint about, I've put them in bold on this Excel document. So they're the bits for me to research next. It's like I've not got these officially. I don't 100% know that I've done them.
I can see here that you put a question mark next to all of the dates that you're not yet 100% sure of. You just got a ballpark figure for that date.
Yeah.
That's great. That's really helpful because then, as you say, you don't, you know, let's say you came back to your research in a few months' time, you might not know that those dates weren't definite. And so you've made it nice and clear to yourself to be able to pick up your research in the future and not waste time wondering where you're at and what you know. So it's really good.
Cool, thank you. It's a lot, isn't it? It was brilliant. I really loved doing it as well. It was like, I think I've actually learned things that my mum hasn't found.
Sure.
So now I'm actually taking her research a bit further. And that was exciting for me. It was my first proper Indiana Jones moment of like, oh, wow, I'm exploring, I'm learning things. So it's cool.
Really cool. And sticking with your Excel sheet, so some of those things, it's great what you did putting it on the research log as points that you can follow up later so that you keep your kind of research goal, the one you've got for that session, in mind and don't get sidetracked, which is the ideal, which we're always striving for and very often not accomplishing. But you could flesh out your Excel sheet as well. So you could include a column or a different sheet within that workbook in your Excel. And then you could have one copy your column of generations, so you, your parents, grandparents, etc., that you wish to find, and copy their names. And on the next one, have a column and call it, whether you found their siblings or whether you found their children. And then, because sometimes you're going to be, we all have different moods when we're doing things. Sometimes you're going to be so determined to stick with your birth, marriage and death quest. And other times you're going to find yourself, something's going to capture your imagination and you're not going to be able to resist looking at those siblings, and you will end up adding them all to your tree. But then if you can keep a record as a nice, clear, at-a-glance thing, which is what your Excel is proving to be to you, then you'll know, oh, I've already added Vernon's siblings, I've already added Vernon's children. And like, the tree is really good, but because it's a digital tree, you can only see a little bit of it legibly. You can only see a little bit of it at a time, can't you? Whereas if it was a massive paper tree, a piece of wallpaper, which is what people used to do in the olden days, you'd be able to see everything in one go, whereas you can't do that. That's a disadvantage.
That was quite a tricky thing as well. Like, obviously, the further back you go, you have to start clicking on people's names and then it expands. But even though it expands, it's still very much in the direct line unless you restart the tree from them. Because like the siblings that I have added, I actually don't know where they are on my tree now, because it was on an entry and I was like, I think one of them was my grandma and then her brother. And then maybe, was there another sibling? I'm not sure. Anyway, so I actually do know where they are on the tree, but I know that by clicking through, they're not going to appear unless I restart the tree root from her.
Yes. And also there's different ways. So I'm sure you know this anyway, just from rummaging around. So when you've got your tree on Ancestry and on lots of online tree builders, you can display your tree in different ways. So if you've got it displayed going sideways, let's say with you on the left-hand side and then working over to the right-hand side of your screen, and that's a traditional pedigree view, and all you'll be seeing is your direct ancestors, so you, your parents, grandparents, etc. But then if you change the view up in the top left-hand corner, you'll be able to change it and have it going the other way, then you can see all of the siblings much more easily. It still is a case of things popping up, but you do see all the siblings listed, which is quite cool. One last bit is the find in tree bit. Have you seen the find in tree? I think that's over on the, I can't remember where it is, might be on the right-hand side, and I think it might be in the menu on the left-hand side. But when you go find in tree, you can type in their name. So if you can remember the names of any of those siblings,
right,
or you can remember the name of the main ancestor, even if you can't remember the siblings' names, and then you can hop quickly to that person.
Oh yeah, on the app there's a little person image and a magnifying glass. That's cool.
It's really helpful because especially as you get more and more people on there, it just helps you quickly navigate to somebody.
Yeah, it's good. It's just getting bigger and bigger without me trying, which is, well, obviously I am trying, but it's cool, if not mind-boggling. I had thought to myself I would set separate sheet on the Excel document for siblings, because this is obviously the first one I've done, it's direct line, isn't it? And I didn't want to muddy it and get confused, because I'm sure there are technical ways where you can like do formulas and link like George Wood links to so-and-so, so-and-so as the child, and you can press, and I'm sure there are ways to do that because I've seen it, but I actually don't know how to do that.
Mm.
But I think a separate sheet anyway would just clarify it a bit.
I think a separate sheet is a good idea, is because then it will help you keep focused, because when you're having your research session, then you can either go, I'm focusing on birth, rate, and deaths, or no, today I'm going to focus on getting the siblings for each of my grandparents or each of my great-grandparents. And it will help you keep in mind, what are you trying to accomplish? Because it is like a bit like when you go to the supermarket and you know you need to get bread and milk, and then you get in there and then you remember 101 other things you need to buy, and before you know it, you've forgotten bread and milk as well.
Yeah, and then you see loads of offers that give you more things, and you're like, oh, I'll have all them as well. And it's like, oh my God.
Yes.
I literally have decided this weekend, just gone, that I actually need to limit the amount of time I spend on this, which is such a weird thing. I never thought I'd think that. But I was frazzled. I was literally just not stopping, finding more names. And I've mentioned before, there's a line where there's three generations and they're all called David or David John. And oh man, I knew which one I was with when I was looking at the certificates, but then some of the names appear twice. So I've got David John gets married to so-and-so. The witness was David John. And it's just like, who? Which one? What generation? And that, it baffled me. Absolutely. It just threw me off so much. And then I did all that. And then I saw my mum and she was like wanting to then join in. And I'm like, I can't take any more names in my head. I can't take any more dates. And then she starts pulling out loads of actual official birth, marriage and death certificates, which I am quite excited to look at. But I just had to say to her, I can't look at these now. I honestly cannot take any more information in my brain, despite having all the Excel documents and stuff. It was just overload. Like, Mary Jane was married to so-and-so and so-and-so. I'm like, I don't know anymore. I just do not know. I have no clue about anything. It was overload.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's because you're creating a database. And so the way you're doing it is kind of, I think this is a really good way to do it. And in a little bit of a way, people could say you're reinventing a wheel, because you could just add this information to Ancestry, or you could get software which you're going to put on your laptop. And there's lots of different family history programs, which you buy as a one-off purchase. Or you can get free versions of lots of them as well, with like cut down tools. But I think the beauty of this is it's so at a glance, and it's so for each of your worksheets within this Excel file, you can have, it's basically like a research project, a research question. And because you're feeling overwhelmed, and potentially that's going to continue because the more you find, the more you'll find. And because you love the completionist idea, which is really, really good and really, really will serve you really well and be really useful, I think if I were you, I'd stick with Excel and use it in conjunction with, you know, with an online tree.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm using Ancestry as my main part of call. That's where I'm putting all the information. And then I'm using my research log in Excel just to guide me. So I know there's a lot of information on Ancestry that I've put in, and finding it might be quite hard work, or knowing which bit I'm tracing might be hard work. But if I've got this, I can like I said, I am going to try and limit myself to like an hour or two, whatever, whenever I'm doing it. But I can come in, find the entries that I've put in bold that I'm not sure about, or the ones that are totally blank, and then be like, right, that's what I'm doing today. No more. That's my theory anyway. I'll end up sitting there for 4 or 5 hours and end up just, exploding.
I think that's pretty normal. Most people do that. Some people, they'll say that, I didn't do it anymore. I can't do it. I can't stay up till 2 o'clock, even for New Year or anything. But some people will stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and they'll just be on a roll. Yeah. I used to be able to do that. So we always keep saying, we keep going, Ancestry, Ancestry, Ancestry. And the reason why we started out with Ancestry is because you took an Ancestry DNA test, didn't you?
I did.
That was your main focus. Actually, you wanted to do your DNA. And then as the weeks have gone by, you've got more into the family history side of it. And so that's why you're looking at Ancestry records, building your tree on Ancestry. And of course, if you'd started out from a different point, if you hadn't done a DNA test, for instance, you might be starting out with Find My Past, because they've got record collections. You can build your tree online there, or the genealogist, or Family Search. So I'm really just saying that because I think what you're doing is right. Any of us, I think it's really good to you. It costs money to pay for a subscription, doesn't it? It costs money to do a DNA test, and you don't want to spread yourself too thinly, be running around like a headless chicken. And at some point in the future, you will find that you want to go and find out more, and that will be on a different website, or it might be in an archive, yeah, which would be really, really cool. And so that's, but that's for the future. For the moment, building your tree and getting all your core details. So I'm just kind of flagging that up, partly to you for the future, and partly in case anybody thinks listening to this podcast that we don't know other websites are available. Of course we know they're available, but there's just such a lot to take on when you're first getting going.
Definitely. And like, obviously for me, I literally was starting, I still am a beginner, starting as a beginner. Ancestry was my first part of court because of the DNA. And it just seemed like a natural flow to carry on within that. And it's presenting me with lots of new information. So why would I not milk that now and get as much out of it as I can? So yeah, the idea of going to another website at the moment does just seem mind-boggling. Obviously there will, I guess, be brick walls that I hit where I'm like, right, I need to go somewhere else and discover X, Y, and Z to get me any further.
Sounds terrifying.
What I'm quite excited about this. So I can see your Excel sheet and how populated it is with information at the moment. And then, so you've got going up to your 3x great grandparents, which is fantastic. If you found all of your, I think it's 16, 3x great grandparents. Now, I don't know whether that's a lot of research. So you probably will be revisiting your DNA results before you've done that. But even if you've got all of your great-grandparents' details in there, and what you've got now, you've got your 16 great-great-grandparents, so 2x great-grandparents, 16 2x great-grandparents on there. So even finding them, that will be a bit, you know, a big chunk of work if you've accomplished all of that. But when you go back to your DNA match list, and then you can search on the names of people, you know, within your match list and find out who's got those people in their trees, and some of your DNA matches who may go by some of those surnames. Or you can also search by places. So when you're doing this research, you're going to be finding lots of place names as well. I'm going to be intrigued whether your DNA matches, they should make a lot more sense to you. You should be starting to get inklings that potentially a match might be related to whichever branch of your family tree, because you'll know so much more about your family tree and your ancestors.
Yeah, well, like I said before, someone got in touch with a few names, saying, oh, can you let me know about this? And it was like, I haven't a clue who any of these people are, but it's all expanding now, isn't it? So I can see that happening, definitely.
So you've already got all of your great great grandparents' names?
I've got all the names, yeah. I just need to confirm a lot of the births and deaths and a few of the marriages.
So I'm saying whether you find out, so you've already got the names and you're building out and verifying.
Yeah, so that will be like the next focus. So the ones that are blank, I haven't got anything on, so I need to go focus on. The ones where I've put the date in bold with a question mark, it's just the year, and that's like a guess from my mum, I'm guessing. I don't know where that's come from.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I got a couple of the great-great-greats from a marriage certificate. So I've started adding them in, but again, I'm trying not to look at them until I've finished the previous layer.
Yeah.
That's my plan anyway. But again, in that, like I said, a couple of the great-greats came up with potentially having multiple marriages. So that's going to be an interesting one to look at.
Mm.
Yeah. I think
so they've got multiple marriages. So yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and even like one that's married into my direct line, this Mary Ann, she was married 3x. So, yeah, I don't know. I just don't know how that works. I don't know how that's going to work on my tree. I don't know what information I'm going to retain or use. It's, yeah.
So you'll be able to add it to your tree, and it will also, thinking back to your DNA batches, it'll make a difference because you may be half relations with some of them. So let's say a Mary Ann and Joseph, a couple.
She is a couple with Thomas Wood.
Thomas Wood. So Mary Ann and Thomas are a couple. So you could be related to you. You're going to be half relations with some of your DNA matches.
Some of the other potentials, yeah. Okay, cool. It's good. I was obviously the joke about me just coming from Pudsey and everybody coming from Pudsey. Early on, I was a little bit terrified because my mum's surname and my dad's surname were crossing over on both trees.
Oh, yeah.
So I was a bit worried I was just actually inbred, but...
Yeah.
What
is this surname? Are you allowed to say what...
Yeah, my surname's Warden, my mum's name is Wood, and there are Woods and Wards that have married.
Ooh.
There are literally a couple that are a Wood and a Ward that married also a few generations back, and it's... Yeah, it's weird. It was a bit terrifying, but I've soon got past that.
Yes, and that's one of the things I think we talked about it before, like learning about the local area where your ancestors came from and just having a... So you can do this by, for instance, going onto freebmd.org and searching in the registration district where your ancestor was born or married or died and just finding out, putting in the surnames and finding out how many other people are coming back on, you know, with that combination, that surname in that place. And you can get a flame, and there are surname maps as well, so you can find out, you know, where surnames are more popular or not. Because if your surname's really popular in an area, you're going to find that they're going to be people with that surname potentially on several branches of your family tree, and it's not a drama. Whereas if it's a very rare name and a very close relationship time frame, then, you know,
well, questions will be asked.
If you got really, really close, it could be questions. Could be an idea.
No, I mean, luckily, again, this was quite exciting. I very quickly got away from Pudsey.
Did you?
I can't remember now, but I've quickly found people that are in Manchester, which, to be honest, I'm not happy about. I'm Yorkshire born and bred. But then equally, I found some people in Ireland and some in Wales. So it is expanding quite quickly, and that's exciting. So it's getting me out of just the local area.
Very exciting, yes. Yeah. And so with these people who you found in these different places, can you remember what any of their occupations were? Because for most of our ancestors, like work, even as today, that's a key driver to make you move because you need a job.
The one in Manchester was... Now, I literally, my mind is full of lots of information and I don't know what's tied to what, so this could be entirely wrong. But I think the one in Manchester originally was in Yorkshire and it was just down as a labourer. But then later on the 1911 census, his occupation changes to butler. So he's, I don't know whether that's going up in the ranks or whatever.
Definitely going up in the ranks, yeah.
So he's gone to work at maybe a stately home. Who knows? I'll make a story up. But yeah, so, but again, that felt good. It's like, oh, I'm doing research.
And the one from Ireland, so what sort of time?
I can't remember with that one because that was one of the multiple marriage ones. And that was just too much for me. I was like, I don't know where to place this or how to place this. I couldn't even work out which marriage happened first. But by the look of it, they moved over to Ireland. I probably could work this out, actually. I think one of them was born in Ireland and I think the other two moved over there. So I'm guessing the two that moved over there, they either separated or died. One died and then the second one was met. That obviously does make sense now. But it's good. It's detective work, isn't it? I like it.
Yeah. And tracing the children of each of the marriages, then that will help you work out which order.
Yes. Well, I was sat trying to work that out. I was looking at the date of their births because somebody else has obviously put this in on Ancestry and these people's names came up. So I've not confirmed it yet because I don't have a clue and I don't want to confirm anything I don't know. But I couldn't work out which one came from which parent and which order they were born in. It was a lot. This was like towards the end of my research as well on that day. And I, like I said, I was frazzled. So much information. It is exciting. I love it.
And this is a nosy question. So how do you find the hints? Do you like the hints? Do you find them?
I do. I really like them. It's just remembering which hint I'm looking at if I want to go back to it later on. Because I started telling my mum about this multiple marriage one. And she was like, oh, no, that's not true, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I've seen it. And all the dates and times seem to be working. And then she was like, show me. So I tried to show her and I could not find where it had come from. So that's maybe my own fault, and I think I did write it actually on my research log on the Word document, so I did eventually find it, but I found it hard work to get back to it. But in general, I think the hints are brilliant because they are, so far I haven't had any that's, well, I think there was one that was wrong, but that was when it was one of the Davids, and I think that was just they'd pulled the wrong David in and it was a generation back's David. I haven't had any that are totally out there and like this is completely not my relative yet.
Yes. And I really like the way you're using the hints. You're remembering that they're hints and you're analysing the whole time. Does this information stack up? Is the time frame correct? Could they have potentially got mixed up with another person by the same name? These are things that we all need to keep asking ourselves the whole time because the hints are really fun and they do give you new ideas and avenues to look down. But then you do have to remember the hints, as you say, because sometimes you get a totally left field suggestion and a hint, and you're like, no, they never went to Philadelphia. Maybe they did, and you don't know yet. But yeah, but you need to kind of be aware.
Yeah, I just don't want to put something in as concrete, yes, and then believe it, and it's wrong, and then I'm going to get tied up in knots later on when things aren't matching up. I want to avoid that as much as I can, because it's confusing enough. I've got three Davids.
It is. So I think brilliant what you're doing with all your research log, with your Excel sheet. It's fine using the hints. So the other two bits is, you know, I think I've mentioned it a few times. I've just mentioned it a few minutes ago, learning about all the other people who go by that name. So it could be whether they're going by that surname, and also drilling down other people who are going by a specific name. So, you know, how many other Marianne Blackburns are there knocking around in that time frame? Because then it just helps you know how much you're at risk of muddling up your Marianne Blackburn with another Marianne Blackburn when you're doing your searching. So it's that kind of background building understanding and knowledge. And that's what makes each of us our own little expert in our own family trees, because no one else will know how many Marianne Blackburns there are in the Pudsey area in the 1870s, but you will, and that will help you make sure you're finding your Marianne's ones, not anybody else's.
Yeah. I keep on looking at the potential matches as well. So when you put somebody's name in, it gives you a potential match for mother and father. And I think that's pulling from someone else's tree that they've put the information in. So I look at that and I see names are matching and I'm like, yeah, that's good. I'm confident about that. But anything that they've put in that I don't know about, as much as it might be matching, it might be correct, I'm not willing to let that be in my tree yet unless I've seen a document that tells me it's correct. I feel like I could cheat and say, yeah, that's fine. Suddenly my tree goes back generations before I know it. But I need to know for myself that it's right. Otherwise...
I love it. I love your attitude. And I think it's much nicer doing what you're doing in a really considered way, because you're building up solid knowledge and it'll build up a little bit slower, but then you're going to have much less chance that you're going to have to unpick things in the future.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I feel like I'm part of the fabric of the community now, even though I'm not really that much, but like I'm starting to know things. And obviously, our magazine does webinars as well. And the other day, I was doing the technical background stuff for it was Jude Rhodes's Brick Wall webinar. And I was talking to her, like, just before the webinar. And suddenly, I found myself chatting about my family tree. And we were relating experiences. She's from Yorkshire as well. And it was really nice. I was like, oh, my God, I'm involved in this. I know something. I can actually have a chat about it. Like, I also work on other webinars for history things. And as this podcast always proves, I know nothing about history. So people will be chatting in beforehand and making like historical jokes. So I laugh along politely. I don't really know what they're talking about. Whereas talking to Jude, I was like, oh my God, I know something. I've got a hint about that. And it was really nice. I felt involved. It's like, wow.
You're a family historian. It's good. And it is just a really nice community, because everybody's just so enthusiastic about their family trees. Everyone who starts doing it. People who haven't started yet, they're missing out. But
equally, that webinar was really interesting for me. It was like, suddenly I'm like, oh, I am actually interested. I'm going to learn something. And then loads of people were asking questions at the end, and it's like, oh, I'm not alone in feeling like this. It was great. It just, yeah. Nice to be part of.
And I think however much research people have done, you always learn a different way of doing things. Like me just seeing your Excel sheet, like, I have seen similar ones, but it's great to see how you've got your colour coding going and you're using bold and question marks. I'm like, oh, I don't use bold and question marks. So just simple little things like that. So it's really quick edit and really clear to see. It's good.
Yeah, I think I'll definitely be sort of regularly sharing this with you just so...
You could show off.
Yeah, just to show off. No, so you can guide me, because I don't want to... This works for me at the moment, but I'm like, well... Obviously, I'm new to this. It's been done hundreds and thousands and millions of times before by other people who might have better ways to do it. So I can't really be complacent and think this is the way it should be done. But at the moment, the structure works for me, where I can just like lose all my information in my head and just open this up and be like, right, okay, Marianne, I don't know her birthday. Let's go do that today. And that appeals to me, because then if I've got 10 minutes, that'll probably end up being 4 hours.
Mm.
I can go and do that.
Mm.
It's terrifying how much it just sucks you in, though. I was not expecting it. I literally said, right, I'll sit down for an hour. do my homework, so I'll look good when we get to the podcast. And then 4 hours later, I frazzled.
Mm.
But I got a lot of information, and I did feel really shit myself.
Mm. Yeah. So, but back to whether you're doing it right, that you're doing it right because you're being thorough, you're doing it right because you're writing down what you find. But beyond that, there isn't one holy grail way of doing it right. So there's no perfect, everyone keeps asking, like we all keep asking each other and ourselves, is there a better way of recording my information? And the kind of the cliche answer is, oh, you've got to find a system that works for you. So this system works for you, which it looks like it does, then it's really good. I think maybe at some point you might want to have some family history software. And some people suggest that you should start off with it right away, but lots of the family history software, it doesn't necessarily have a very easy interface, and it can be hard to know, you know, where you're adding things. And so you're learning a whole new bit of software as well as everything else you're trying to do. So, and you're a really busy person who, although at the weekend you managed to do 4 hours, on a normal weekday, you will be snatching a bit of time on the bus, a bit of time after running club. You're snatching moments here and there. So you need to not be getting bogged down in trying to learn some software which is brand new to you, because that will inhibit your family history progress. So I think this is ideal for the moment.
Yeah. I don't think I could take in any of these, like, new programs or any information anyway. No, there's just so much going around my head. But yeah, I am loving it. And like, obviously, I mentioned about the anti-Mildred thing. I feel like that would be like a cool case study to do. It's like, can I test my research skills, right? I've got the whooping. I think it's on this side of the family, and I can use, like, it's my nana. I'll use her as a starting block and see how I can use ancestry to track back and find this missing Auntie Mildred. Maybe I'll make that my homework already for next time.
Or you could just keep her on your kind of wish list of jobs to do. And in the course of finding your direct ancestor's siblings, she should turn up at some point, shouldn't she?
She should. I just quite like the challenge now in that one, though. In my head, it's like, that's a good way to test my nous and see if I can navigate things. There's a hashtag on my research log anyway. I can go back to that one.
So I've got a question about your Excel sheet, though. Under source, some of the entries you've said, like, for instance, England, Wales, National Probate Calendar, and you've got the years that the collection lasts for, and you've got the date specific to your ancestor. But some of them you've written first. So what does that mean then?
I didn't know what to put, so it's like first-hand information. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Someone's told me that. Like, well, my mum. My mum's told me that. So she knows it as fact because she's alive. She's been alive when these people were alive, and she knows that information. So I don't actually have any certificate. I mean, probably do actually, but I haven't seen a certificate or a document to say that that is fact. My mum has told me that. So I'm trusting her on that. But obviously, it's my mum, my dad, and my grandparents.
Yeah.
I've only got the first hand information for.
No, that's fine. And you know what that means. So that's great. So looking here at your grandparents, have you looked up Arthur and Elizabeth? Have you looked up them in the 1921 census?
I haven't looked up them in particular, no.
Because that could be fun. That could go on your to-do list, because this is taking you away from your birth, marriage and death quest, but it will help you potentially find their siblings, because here they are. Arthur's born 1915, Elizabeth's born 1918. And so they're little tiny kids at the time of the 1921 census. So they could well be at home with their brothers and sisters. And so that would be a nice, easy way for you to find some of their brothers and sisters. Obviously, some of their brothers and sisters might get born after the 1921. They may have had older brothers and sisters who potentially even have left home by the 1921, or they could have had brothers and sisters who sadly died as very young kids. But that would be a good starting point on your sibling.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good example. And I've actually, I don't know why, but most of my research yesterday in particular was following my dad's mother's line, which is the Hearn thing. So that's where all these Davids appear. I don't know why I've just become bogged down in that line. And I honestly don't know why I didn't pick it. It just seemed to happen that I suddenly started going back with this one particular set instead of doing this methodical, this generation. So I did end up with Elizabeth Ruth's siblings on my tree.
Ah!
I did save them. Did I put a note on that? I've entered some siblings there, yeah. Edmund, Eleanor and Albert. So I have started doing that, but again, I've got that fear of being information overload and too low, and I don't know where to find them. And if I haven't got an Excel sheet yet making a note of the fact I've added them, I then won't know where they've come from. And that terrifies me. I want to know where they've come from before I put them anywhere. But even though I've just said to you, I have added some, I feel a little bit naughty about
it. No, it's not naughty. And when you said about you find yourself going on a line, and that's kind of inevitable, isn't it? Because, you know, if you've got their marriage certificate and then you're finding the bride and groom's dads, and then so immediately that's going to take you back to that generation on those lines. So there's an inevitability that you are going to be tracing lines, and then you bring yourself back to your starting point and you head off on a different branch. And
maybe that's how I should do it. Because like I said, I'm trying to go generation to generation, each person one at a time. Right, I've got your birthday, stop. I've got your birthday, stop. But like you've just said, and this is how it happened with the Hearn one. I found the marriage certificate, and then suddenly I find the parents' names, and then I find the next set, and that's how it sort of evolved.
I wouldn't put the brakes on that because sometimes it can be, it's when you're in the throes of it, it's all making more sense, isn't it?
It is.
Whereas come back to it in a few weeks, you have to refresh yourself and everything.
Yeah, and all equally, as soon as I come back to another couple, they start throwing more names up, and suddenly the information I learned 10 minutes ago on the Hearn line, it's gone. It's lost. I've forgotten it. Even though I've written it down, it's so many names. And then like, is Sarah so-and-so married to that one? And it's like, no, that's a completely different generation and a completely different relationship. But yeah. Have I mentioned it's a lot? It's a lot.
Yeah, it's very, very good. So you've gotten a pretty big project here. You've done brilliantly getting all of those names, and now you're filling in the dates. So I would say that's a few weeks' work.
Yeah, as long as I can control myself.
Yes.
I am honestly going to try and just do 1 or 2 hours at a time, as opposed to just sitting there continuously. I think it'll be better for my mind and give me a bit more clarity to know who I'm tracing and where I'm tracing them to. The hard part is stopping, isn't it, though? Because when you find a name on a document, and this is what happened to me yesterday, find a name on a document, it leads to something else.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to forget that you've got that name. Or
that's where you have your research log.
True.
Yeah.
That can be...
See, you've showed off about your amazing Excel sheet. Have you got your research log handy? Is it in a...
Yes. It's a little bit messier than my research log. My research log is... Sorry, My research log is a little bit messier. I started doing it by date, what I'd done that day and the to-do list. And now I'm doing it just by date. So I was putting in the information that I've added to Ancestry, so I know what date I added it to Ancestry. So like, I've added great, great, great grandparents to Ancestry. I've added a death date for a certain person. I've also, again, made a note of the certificate that it came from, so that if I go back and need to question why, is that right? Did I do it? I can go back and say, all right, David George, he died at this date. It's that document. And then, yeah, also now the hashtag thing, I've put hashtags for things that I'm not ready to add to my Ancestry tree, but I know that information's available and I do want to go back and do it because it will flesh everybody out, but at the moment it's not my focus. So occupations was one, they all kept coming up, like dock workers, shirt makers, the butler guy. And then, yeah, I've got another hashtag here called found, not added. And that was, again, the person who had 2 wives and 5 children. And it's like, that's information that's interesting. I want to follow it up. I'm going to have to follow it up. But I mentally wasn't ready to take that challenge on. So I've put it on my research log. And now I know I can go back to that. So once I go back to it and I've done it, I'll remove the hashtag from my research log. Yeah. I'm tired just talking about this.
That's why it's got to be written down. I remember everyone used to say that to me, write it down. And I think before people used to be brilliant at writing it down. And then when we first started building online trees, I think even though there was the capacity to write it down on a computer, write it down digitally, it doesn't matter whether it's written down on paper or digital, I think we got a little bit less good at doing methodical research. Maybe that's just me, the kind of era when I joined in doing kind of formal family history. But then now, for the last however many years or forever, people say write it down, but I think we're really getting it. There's so much information, and I don't know what will happen to the family trees in the future, because there are family trees and some of them are, you know, bequeathed onto other people, and at some point there's going to be a lot of information in the cloud and I don't know what will be kept. And I feel like we need to make sure it's correct and valued. And then if it's valued, it'll be valued by the future and be a chance of survival, digital survival.
I feel like ancestry can make you complacent as well. If you're not willing to do the background work, you can take it all as fact and you can think you know it all and you've thought it all. But without my research log, I wouldn't be able to then tell you why I've added this person to that tree and where it's come from, because it's all just intermingles, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Makes it feel solid and real. And if you're happy to believe that and just go off and be like, yeah, that's fine, great. But I could see the potential of somebody just turning up, right, I'll just put this person in. Oh yeah, it's linked to them. And like make basically a fake family tree accidentally. And it all sounds right.
No, I think it could be, because it's, and to be fair to Ancestry or any other websites that offer hints, they do call them hints. They don't say this is a bona fide fact.
Yeah. You could just,
well, it might be a bona fide fact, but is it relevant to your family, or is it just a bona fide fact that's relevant to someone else's? It's a fact in the wrong place.
It's just so easy and so tempting to be like, oh, wow, these people, and then 10 people related to them, and suddenly my tree's expanded, and it's just a massive. It's so tempting to press, yes, this is right, but no, I won't do it.
Well, brilliant. Really, really brilliant. So do we have any questions, Nathan?
Okay, Helen, we've got a question for you. This is from someone called Margaret. Could you please pass on this to who may be able to help? I am going around in circles, but the answer could be staring me right in the face. Sorry, if anyone out there could help, they'd be very grateful. I have been going over my tree and came across a hint from Ancestry naming the parents of Maria Morris, 1816/1818, who married Stephen Rowan/Rowing, 1810/1863. I hope you're taking all this information in, Helen. On the 4th of December, 1836. Her father, Robert Morris, mother, Rebecca Buns. These are the names given in the hints. I thought they ring bells, so I went to Robert Morris tree to see. I had Maria married to Thomas William Smith, 1816/1843, on the 4th of July. Wow. Looking on Found My Past to find that it appears that she had married twice. Well, this is very similar to what I'm going for. The other Maria of the age is the daughter of Daniel. Did Stephen die before 1863? Plus, William married again in 1847 to someone called Elizabeth. Maria died in 1855. Have I got this all wrong? These people lived in Norfolk.
Well, that is a lot of information. So, what is the number of her question? So, she's trying to find out whether she's got the correct husband, I think, for her Maria, isn't she?
Because
she's Maria, who's married a Stephen. And then she's saying, no, she found a hint which has a Maria married to a Stephen. And then she has a Maria married to a Thomas. And so they're a few years apart, aren't they? And then she's saying, the obvious answer, so Find My Past does have it that Maria married twice. So both answers correct. Yes, Maria was married to Stephen. And yes, she was married to Thomas potentially. And then it's saying the other Maria of that age is the daughter of Daniel, whereas this lady Margaret's Maria has a father, Robert. So she's got she's got lots of questions. I think first of all, she needs to establish, is it definitely her Maria who's married both Stephen and Thomas? And then she's saying there's the other Maria of that age is the daughter of Daniel. And that's precisely, you know what, I keep whittling on going, you need to know who else in your area is going by that name. So this is precisely why. So Margaret has come across her own Maria Morris, who's 1816-18, the daughter of Robert. And then there's another Maria knocking around who's the daughter of Daniel. And that's just perfect if you know that there's this other Maria knocking around who potentially you could get in the muddle with. So that's why you need to know. Because if you don't know there's another one you could get in the muddle with, you're going to definitely get in the muddle because you're going to be muddling them. Yeah. So did Stephen die before 1863? Oh, my goodness. So what I would do, so this question, just talking about it audibly, is making my head bubble a little bit or melt. So I would draw them all up in a family tree. I would, so that I can see everyone who I have got a connection between each other. So Maria put her parents in, put her two spouses in. And then I would, so put everyone I possibly can do matched up in a family tree. And then I would also do an Excel sheet, back to Excel, the family history go-to tool. And I would put all of the known details and dates that I have in for them. And then I would start to create a timeline for the people, because then you can see any overlaps and any inconsistencies. Because if somebody died before they should be, you've got them down as doing something, but they're already dead. Well, clearly that's not possible. So you're ruling in and out more likely situations, and you're ruling in more likely situations, and you're ruling out impossible situations by creating a fact file of all of the information you can have for each of those people. And then that would answer some of her questions about, you know, who's correct in the right place. As to whether Stephen died in 1863, I think I'm going to have to think about that. Can you think, Nathan, why that's a significant question, why she asked that? Because I can't. I might be being extra, extra stupid. There must be a reason why she said it, but...
I'm not seeing it. I feel like there must be a document that suggests that. I don't know.
Yeah. So, well, I might even do this as a little mini project and see if I can come up with a bit more of a lucid answer. So I would definitely say plot the facts on a like written narrative, like, or spoken narrative of family history information. Can be, imagine if you had all the information you've got in your Excel and it went, Nathan was born here and died there and married here and his mum was born here. It would be impossible to pick out the salient details. You just have a morass of paragraphs of words, and the same with spoken words. You kind of need it as a fact file format, and then you can go to the number of the issue. So I'm going to work on this, and then I'm going to see if I can give a better answer next time. Timeline to rule things in and out, rule in and out possibilities. That's my very short, broad brush, not very helpful answer.
Like, coming from my perspective of what I've just been doing, in my head I'm like, well, there must be documents that match up with like this, with the parents, the different parents, and it's easy to solve. But obviously she's almost 100 years further back where I currently am. Is it harder to do it then? Are the documents not as good?
That is a really good question, and it does get harder. So if you're going back, so for England, each country has different time periods and different record collections and different information on their record collection. So on a Scottish birth, you're going to have slightly different details than you're going to have on an English and Welsh birth, or Scottish marriage was slightly different from English and Welsh. So Scottish marriages had the mother's maiden names on right from the get-go in 1854, which is super helpful. So you're not just finding the dad's names on those marriage entries, you're finding the mum's names as well. And whereas in England, women's names only got added onto their children's marriage certificates, I think, from 2022. So the last couple of years, it's insane, like, kind of comparison, isn't it? And so everything's slightly different. But going back to the time period, if you get back before civil registration, so that's 1854 for Scotland, 1837 for England and Wales, roughly 1864 for Ireland, but Ireland had a few different starting points. Had 1845 for, I think, for their marriages. Anyway, so once you go back before civil registration, then the parish register entries get progressively less detailed the more back in time you go. She's looking in the mid-1800s, though. And so once you found this, your parish register entries that you're finding, they're detailed. They're just as good as a certificate, aren't they? They've got the father's names. They've got places and occupations and all sorts of things. So once you get to the civil registration period, the church records tend to be very parallel, detailed information. Go back before civil registration, so before 1837 for England and Wales. Progressively, as you go back in time, there'll be less and less details, to the extent when you get back, let's say in the 1600s, and then you could just have, it'll have, so if it was you, Nathan, it would go, or Helen, us, do me, it would go Helen, daughter of William, / my maiden name. Yeah?
Right, yeah.
So my dad's surname, but won't even mention there was a mother. Incidental. Yeah?
Well, yeah, it does make it more challenging.
That does make it more challenging.
Hmm.
And then it definitely does make it more challenging, and it's not just... There's so many things which make it more challenging. So when you've actually found the record, it's got fewer details on it. But when you're going back before civil registration, so before these state national record collections. They're smaller collections, so you're looking at parish registers. There's bishop's transcripts, so there's diocesan records. So these are covering a much smaller area. So and they're being digitized piecemeal, and there's been fantastic work done the last few decades by family historians initially, and then the last decade or so to get them all online. So there is really good coverage online, but it's still not comprehensive like the birth, marriage and death certificates. So there's gaps in it. So you may not find your ancestor simply because their register hasn't been digitized yet. Yeah, and then once you find it, it can have really hard handwriting to read. There's so many obstacles. It goes on and on and on. So many obstacles. And they'll have weird terminology. So they'll go on the fourth inst, and like inst, what it means is that will be referring to the month. So the fourth inst, and then you have to scroll back and find, oh, the last time they mentioned a month was June. So it's the 4th of June. And then you'll be scrolling back a few pages to find where it says 17, whatever, 33 in big scrawly, inky writing.
Right. I've already had fun and games with that on some of the ones.
Have you? Yeah.
I've got a guy called, his middle name was, I can't read the handwriting, but it looks like his middle name was Worth.
Oh, yeah.
So his middle name is George Worth. And I'm like, it's not a surname, it's definitely the middle name, but I can't work out if it would be anything else. Would someone be called Worth? I don't know.
Yes, he could be. So that's a wonderful clue, because having a surname as a middle name, that's very likely got a family connection of some kind.
Right, I hadn't even clocked that idea.
So that's really fun to find that. And when you start weaving in the census records, which would be kind of your next stage once you've got more of these birth, marriage and deaths on there, then you may find at some point that there's a somebody Worth living with your direct line ancestors, and then there's a lodger who's a Worth, who turns out he's actually the brother-in-law of your whatever is, and you'll go, oh, it all makes sense. Yeah. So I've got this people in the 1860s. So my great-great auntie's called Helen McPherson, and I'm always really fond of her because she's got the same first name as me. And my granny was really fond of her, and she used to look after my granny, and Helen McPherson never had any children of her own. So she kind of retains a kind of place of fondness in lots of family members' memories, even though she was quite a long time ago now.
Yeah.
Her middle name was Smart, and I never knew why she was called Smart, and I couldn't find any family connections to Smart, and I still haven't found a family connection to Smart. And one of her brothers is called William Smart McPherson. But anyway, I found in the census there was somebody living with them in about, I think it's the 1860s, 1861 census, and he's called Andrew Smart. And I'm like, there's a family connection there that they all like this guy. And so this random man's surname starts getting woven into as a family middle name just out of fondness to this random person who lived with them. As far as I can tell, it's just a random person. I haven't found that he's related yet.
I'm sure you'll be making stories up before you know it.
I will, yeah.
That's nice. It's a nice idea as well, isn't it? They like so much that they've involved them into the family. And
people sometimes talk about the kind of, they call it the friends and, it's called it the fan network. So it's friends, associates and neighbours. And it's talking about, that could be a really helpful thing. Not particularly for you at the moment, but it can be, partly it's just fun and interesting to remember to keep an eye out of the people who keep cropping up in your ancestors' lives. So, it may be that, back to the point of scouring to get every detail on a marriage certificate, those witnesses may be relations, siblings of the bride and groom. They may be friends. They can sometimes just be people who are kind of habitual witness signers in the local church and have no emotional relevance to your family or no bloodline relevance. But they can be people that are related, or the executors and wills. They can be related and give you clues about family connections. People named in wills can give you clues about that sort of thing. The other people nearby on the census, so don't just look at your family, look at the houses nearby. And these are people they lived near. And sometimes you can spot people coming up again. So it can just be fun. And then also it can be really, really useful if you've got a migratory family.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to, like today, people will move near friends and near people they have work associations with, really. If you're moving to a new country, you want to have, most of us don't want to be all by ourselves. We want to start making friends and building a new community for ourselves.
It just sounds more and more confusing. More names to add to more lists.
It is, but more fun and more understanding. So, because the names already, like as you say, you found that butler and you're intrigued by him. So it is, you are finding names and dates and places. So it is a fact file. But before you know it, the kind of stories will start to swim to the top and you'll, something will, maybe it'll, you'll find a newspaper article and it'll be talking about what a great butler your ancestor was. Or, I don't know, that you're going to find, you find stories about, so he potentially, I think he's turned his life around, going from labourer to butler. That sounds like a really good trajectory. He's he's making something of himself.
So yeah.
It'd be intriguing. How did he manage it?
Yeah, and then, like, I mean, it's a small journey, but he's gone over to Manchester and then later in life comes back to Yorkshire, then where my immediate line sort of starts. There must be a story there as well, like what made them move back, and we will find out or not, who knows.
Yeah, and that's why you need to build out between, not just get the birth, marriage and death for each of our ancestors, because if you do that, you have such a little, you're just dipping in on 3 days of somebody's life, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a bit cold, isn't it?
And, and you never would have known that he'd got to Manchester in the meantime.
But it is exciting just to see those little bits, like I probably shouldn't mention this yet because I don't really know what I'm talking about, but one of my ancestors was born in India.
Yeah.
And again, this is, I was aware of that. I had it on my tree already. And this is another sibling thing where I haven't dared to investigate it, but one of the sibling hints was suggesting that they were born in a different region of India. So there's been a journey and something's happened there. And I was like, oh, that's quite exciting. That could take me on an Indian adventure.
Yes.
So it's something to look forward to and like dig about in.
Completely conversely, a couple of years ago, we stayed in an Airbnb in the Lake District, and I'd never heard of this before. And the pub landlord said it, and I've never verified it, so I hope it's true. But he said that lots of the, you know, there's lots of farming families, very, very rural communities, and there were little paths over, like really quick. Well, not necessarily quick because there's lots of altitude in the paths, but they're very direct routes, and they were called coffin trails because when, so people, you know, you'd grow up, you'd leave your family home and go off and seek work, but when you died at the end of the day, you wanted to go back and be buried in the parish that you were born and baptised in, and so they would have these quick, handy coffin trails, which I thought sounded so evocative, and just how hard work and how heartbreaking carrying somebody's coffin. Yeah, back to their place of their birth. It's kind of very poignant, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's quite dark as well.
It is quite dark. It is dark. I wasn't sure whether that was a lovely thing to have a home to go back and be buried in, or was just.
It's nice coming home, isn't it? I guess that idea, but it's instantly put me in a folk horror mindset.
Yes, and from a family history point of view, they're baptized in the. I'm buried in the same parish, and you go, oh, they just never left. And it's like, well, they did. Unless you find out about the middle years, you're not going to.
We're all from Pudsey.
Yes, yeah. I think that's everything for this week, isn't it?
Yes.
You've got masses and masses of homework. I'm going to set myself on a mini project and try and get my head around that query from Mark.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you find out on that one.
Yeah, I have no idea. It may be nothing. I don't want to overpromise, but I'm going to give it a go. And sure. I'll have learning points of things I got stuck on, even if I haven't got an answer.
That sounds good to me. Yeah. I am obviously going to carry on doing my missing bold dates and seeing what I can flesh out. But I do quite fancy doing the mystery of Auntie Mildred. I think that could be quite good fun.
What a great title. You got to do.
It's my next novel.
Next time, Nathan, whether you've done the mystery of Auntie Mildred or whether you've stuck to the spreadsheet.
Yes.
Okay, see you then next time.
See you later. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.